WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there's no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning, my name is Arthur. It's the 26th of October, 2022. Halloween is just 5 days upon us. So I'm going to conclude my run of playing suspenseful, eerie dramas. I've gotten away from my norm this month. Plus, there was some training mixed in there. The first show I'm going to play this morning, I've played before because it features Frances Farmer. This is Suspense. This is called The Sisters. This had an original air date of the 30th of March, 1958. Thanks.
Miss Kathy Lewis, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Now, here is a very lovely item. The lining is pure silk.
Yes, that's very nice. But I believe I'd like to see something perhaps even a little better.
Oh, of course. If you will just step over this way, Miss Haskell. Now, here is an exquisite casket, something that really honors the departed.
It is beautiful.
Now, the interior is just the same as the last one you looked at, but the casket itself is of bronze, solid bronze. And notice particularly the seams, guaranteed airtight and watertight. You know, of course, how important that is.
Oh, yes, of course.
In 100 years or even 200 years, this casket will be just as strong and look just as beautiful as it does on this stand today. You couldn't buy a finer piece of workmanship.
How much would this one be, please?
This casket, a Duravo, by the way, Duravo for durability, as we say in the trade, is expensive. But it is such a solace to know that one has given the dear departed the finest possible last honor. This Duravo is priced at $750.
Very well. I'll take it.
I'm sure you'll never regret it. In all my years as a mortician, I've never found a family that has not been completely satisfied with the Duravo. And now, do you wish us to handle the funeral arrangements?
I don't know yet. If you'll just hold the casket here for me for a while, please.
Hold it? But for how long?
Not more than 3 weeks.
3 weeks? I don't understand. Who is the party, the deceased? Who is the casket for?
It's for me.
Lydia, where have you been? You've been gone all afternoon.
I've been shopping.
Did you get me some ribbons?
No, I didn't have time.
Oh, I wanted some new ribbons. My others are all worn out, see, Lydia?
Ellie, I wish you'd stop putting ribbons in your hair like a schoolgirl. You're almost 40 years old.
I know, Lydia. I know.
Then try to act like it.
I wonder why we have to grow old. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we were young like we used to be?
Well, we're not, Ellie, so stop talking nonsense.
It is nonsense, isn't it?
Indeed it is.
Oh, the doorbell rang while you were out, just before you came home.
You didn't answer it?
Oh, no. You told me never to answer it. I just looked out of the upstairs window.
Did you see who it was?
Yes, it was a man. A rather big man. He rang a long time, and then he went away.
He didn't see you, did he?
Oh, no. I just peeked ever so carefully from behind the curtains. Then I came down here and watched him going down the walk.
You came downstairs?
Yes,
I told you never to come down those stairs when I'm not in the house.
It was all right, Lydia. I held on very tight to the banisters all the way, and I didn't once look down the stairwell. So I didn't get dizzy, and I didn't want to jump.
Well, don't do it again.
I won't. I promise. What did you buy today, Lydia?
A duravo.
What's a duravo?
Don't ask so many questions, Ellie.
All right. Lydia, I think I'll sew a while. I could fix up some of these old ribbons. May I, Lydia?
Yes, sew. It will be good for you.
Thank you. Lydia?
Yes?
Lydia, could I go shopping someday?
Don't be a fool.
I'm sorry. I just thought... No, I suppose you're right. It wouldn't do. Not yet. There wasn't any mail today.
Wasn't there?
No. I thought perhaps there'd be a letter from David. It's been such a long time since he's written.
I haven't noticed.
Oh, yes. He used to write every week on Tuesday, and I'd get the letter on Thursday. But there wasn't one this week or last or the week before that. It's strange, isn't it? But perhaps he's been busy.
Perhaps. Stop singing that. Stop it.
But Lydia, it's my favorite hymn.
Well, learn another one. That's all you sing day and night, day and night. The same tune over and over and over. Now stop it.
Lydia. Lydia, sometimes you frighten me. The way you look at me. You make me think that perhaps I'm not getting well. That perhaps I'm still crazy. I'm not. Am I, Lydia? I'm not so crazy.
Yes?
Good evening. You Miss Lydia Haskell?
Yes?
Well, can I speak to you for a minute?
Well, I don't...
I was here this afternoon. There was no one home.
What is it, please?
I'm from the police department.
Oh, really? I don't see what the police would want with me. But come in if you wish.
Thanks. Miss Haskell, we got a call this afternoon from Doan Brothers, the undertakers... And, well, you've got to admit it's sort of unusual for a woman to order a casket for herself.
Unusual? I've heard of many cases of that kind. People who are alone in this world with no one else to look after things.
Sure, I know. Only it's a little more unusual when you can name the date. The undertaker said you wanted the casket held for 3 weeks. Why 3 weeks? There must be some reason for that.
There is. I'm going to die. I shall die in 3 weeks, or perhaps even before. That's why I ordered the casket. You may call it a premonition, if you like.
Maybe I could also call it suicide. I don't know whether you know it, but suicide is a crime in the eyes of the state.
For which there is no punishment.
Not if it's successful, no, but our job's to prevent it.
I have no intention of taking my own life. There is no need to do so, since I know I'm going to die.
I don't quite understand that.
I didn't expect you to.
Miss Haskell, do you live here alone?
Yes.
No relations, no housekeeper?
I live alone here. And now, if you're finished with your impertinent questions...
I'm sorry, Miss Haskell. I'm only doing my job. I was told to find out why you bought that casket.
Then I think we may assume you have found out.
I guess so. Sorry I had to bother you.
So am I. Good night.
Oh, Miss Haskell, how are you going to die?
I don't know. Nor do I consider it important. Why should you?
Yeah. Well, good night.
Good night.
Lydia?
Ellie, what are you doing sitting on the stairs in the dark?
Lydia, I heard what that man said. Lydia, why did you buy the casket? Why are you going to die? You mustn't, Lydia, you mustn't die. I'd be alone if you died.
Go up to bed, Ellie.
Oh, Lydia, you won't die. Promise me you won't.
I promise you. Now go to bed.
Why did you buy the casket? Why, Lydia? Why do you want to die? I don't want to die. No one does.
You have such a lot to live for, haven't you, Ellie?
Yes, I have, Lydia. I've been happy. You've made me happy. And someday when I'm well again, David will be waiting for me. You know he will be. You've always told me he'd be waiting. And he'll see that I'm well again, and he'll take me back. I know he will. I'm not that much older. David won't see me as old. He told me that when I was well, no matter how long it took, he'd still see me as a young girl.
Haven't you learned yet? Don't you know yet that you're mad and you'll always be mad?
No. No. No, I'm getting better, Lydia. You know I'm getting better.
Yes, putting bows in your hair, sewing ribbons all day long, sneaking about the house at night, spying on me, singing the same hymn over and over and over until I think I'm going mad, too. Oh, yes, you're getting better.
Is that why you want to die? To get away from me? I thought you loved me, Lydia.
Why should I love you? I gave you the best of everything I had. I've given you my whole life. I even gave you David.
Lydia. You were in love with David? He came to our house. Was it you he came to see?
Yes. But I had to stand by and watch you take him from me. When you had your first attack, I was glad. People said what a shame it was, but I was glad.
Lydia.
Because I knew then that he could never have you. Oh, yes, you were going to be cured, and he was going to wait. But it won't matter now how long he waits, because you'll never be cured, and he'll never have you, never.
You hate. You've always hated me. You didn't bring me here so I'd be cured. You wanted to keep me this way. Mad. That's why you took me out of that place. Because they might have made me well again.
Go upstairs.
You hate me. bought a casket today, Lydia. Was it for yourself? Or is it for me?
Ellie, what a dreadful thing to say.
Yes. I can see it in your eyes. It is for me. You're going to kill me.
Ellie, you're my sister. My twin sister.
And you want to get rid of me because you hate me. Yes. Yes, because you love David. You're going to kill me, and they'll come and find me and bury me. And they'll think it's you.
Ellie, you are mad.
They'll think it's you who is dead. Because no one knows I'm living here. And then you'll go away. You'll go back to David. And you'll say that Lydia has died. And he'll think you are me. And that I'm well again. And he'll marry you. You'll have him. You'll be Ellie. And you'll have my David.
Did you hear what I said? Go upstairs and get to bed.
Lydia. Lydia. How can you be so wicked?
She's just pretending to be asleep. She's lying over there on the other side of the room, staring at me through the dark. She knows it was the truth tonight. She knows I'm going to kill her. And now that she knows, it will have to be soon. And it mustn't look like murder. No, it mustn't. But how? How shall I do it? That hymn. That hymn. I could kill her for that. Just for singing that hymn. I could kill her. But how? Stairs. Stairwell. She gets dizzy as she looks down into the stairwell. Yes. Three floors straight down. The stairwell, of course. Ellie. Ellie, you mustn't cry anymore. Do you hear me? You mustn't be afraid of the dark. Here, I'll light the lamp for you. There, dear. That's better, isn't it? Why, you're shivering. We'll go down to the parlor and light a fire. And I'll make you a nice cup of hot milk. Come, Ellie.
No.
Now, Ellie, stop acting like a child.
I am a child. Mommy, I'm your little Ellie.
Now, come, dear. Here's your wrapper. Put it around your shoulders. That's my little girl. Get up now. Give me your hand, dear. Now, be careful. Walk slowly. There we are. Now, hold on to the banister, dear. That's right. I'll hold the lamp up high so you can see better.
I'm afraid. The stairwell.
Ellie, you must get over that fear. Look, Ellie. Just look down. There's nothing to frighten you. Look down the stairwell, Ellie.
No.
I'm holding you, dear. Just lean over and look down.
No. Don't make me look. I can't stand it.
Come closer, dear.
No.
Closer. Lean over. Lean
no.
over.
No.
Lean over, Ellie. Look down.
No.
Now, Ellie. No.
Let me go.
Lean over. Look down. Look down.
Thank you.
Well, that ended a little quicker than I thought. That was Suspense. I've featured that before because it had Francis Farmer. Suspense was, it aired for 20 years from 1942 to 1962. Had some very prominent directors, creators, Norman McDonough, who did Gunsmoke, Fort Laramie, and William Spear. William Spear was noted for his work on Suspense. That was called The Sisters, had an original air date of the 30th of March, 1958. I got some time here, so I'm gonna try and squeeze one in that I found. This is called 5 Minute Mystery. That's what it's called, the show title. And this one's called Zombie. I don't have an original air date for this.
Another 5 Minute Mystery. South, hidden in the mysterious low country of Cuba, a sugar plantation house, dimly lighted in the somber dusk. In the parlor of the house sits a small, thin woman.
Lester Lockwood is my brother, Inspector. His wife, Nydia, drove him to throw himself off the riverbank.
Suppose you tell me the whole story.
Well, 2 years ago, my brother and his wife left their professorships in the English department at Lynbrook College and came here to live and write. Time went by, and Nydia became fascinated by the native drums. One night, she wandered alone in the jungle.
And never came back, as I remember.
And then the first of those mysterious notes appeared, written in blood on dried bark. I have been chosen, it said, for one of the living dead. Come to me, Lester, and share my eternity. It was signed, Nydia. Lester watched for her, certain somehow she'd come for him. And last night, we were standing on the jungle path.
Judith, the drums, they're getting louder. She will come, I know she will.
Oh, Lester, give up this plantation, it's evil.
It's too late. She's here. Oh. Listen, did you hear that?
What?
A movement, yonder beyond the trees. Look!
Oh, Lester, it is Nydia.
It's true. Oh. Judith, my wife's one of the living dead. I've got to find her and save her from this voodoo magic.
He ran off in the darkness, and I went quickly back to the house to wait. And at last, Lester came back.
I couldn't find her. I looked everywhere.
Then you've got to come away from this place tonight.
Judith, look here on the window ledge.
Oh, another of those terrible notes. What does it say?
You are a human. You cannot know the glory of eternal life. Come to the jungle, to the drums, and share my living death. Keep this between you and I.
Oh, she's trying to destroy you. Trying to, Lester.
I'm going to her, Judith.
No!
Lydia's waiting for me to come.
Lester, come back! Come back!
And this is the note your brother found last night on the window ledge, Miss Lockwood. Eh?
Yes. Others, I suppose he destroyed them.
I see. And you say your brother's wife was formerly an English instructor?
At Lynbrook. She met Lester there.
Your story, Miss Lockwood, is interesting, and I think I know the truth. But the chief at headquarters would rather hear it from you, so come along.
What was the clue that led Inspector James to arrest Judith Lockwood? In a moment, he'll tell us, but first...
Thank you.
now, here's Inspector James.
Under questioning, Judith Lockwood broke down and confessed to the murder of her brother and his wife. She was a pretty mixed-up woman, but she had imagination. I knew Judith had written the note herself because no instructor of the English language is going to make 2 grammatical errors in 4 short sentences. You don't say human for human being. And nothing is ever between you and I. So, if you didn't know, let's keep it between you and me.
Wow, that was something. That was riveting radio. That was Zombie, 5-minute mystery. It was came in under 5 minutes. Most of that was organ stuff. There's no original air date. All the only thing I could get out of it was the 68th episode. I was reading a little bit about it last night, and there's not any. That might be the only recording still available. Apparently, it was a variety show where people had to guess what the mystery was. I don't know. I had some time because my first suspense was just 19 minutes. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. We'll take a second to do some FCC obligations.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0, all guns are always loaded. Rule 1, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry, for that FCC obligation. Next up for the second half of the show, I guess since I'm running 3 shows here for the third of the show, I'm going to have a Willis Cooper production. I mentioned some about him last week, but I left my notes in my old notebook. Now, this was a series that he developed in the late 40s. Quiet Please. Read quite a favorable reviews about it all day Saturday. I spent a good amount of time reading about Willis Cooper. So this is Quiet Please. The title's going to be The Thing on the Forble Board. If you don't know what a Forble Board is, they will explain that. Said an original air date of the 9th of August, 1948. Thanks for listening. I'd just like to mention it's nice to have the CD players back.
Quiet, please. Mutual Broadcasting System presents Quiet Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet Please for tonight is called The Thing on the Forble Board. Me, I'm a roughneck. Well, I was a roughneck, 20 years ago, a little too old, too slow now. Besides, I got a dollar now, I don't have to be a roughneck, you see. Married, got a nice home, had to meet my wife. Hey, Mike. Her name's Maxine, but she likes to be called Mike.
Mike!
I guess she's busy out in the kitchen someplace. Besides, she doesn't hear very well. Shame, too, she's so pretty and everything. Well, you'll meet her. Sit down. I was saying I was a roughneck. Well, no, that doesn't mean exactly what you think it means. A roughneck is an oil field worker, specifically a guy in a drilling crew. Call them roughnecks like you call a section hand on the railroad a gandy dancer, a garage hand a grease monkey. Same time you work around a drilling crew for a while, you're going to be a roughneck in every sense of the word, boy. A derrick floor or a forble board's no place for a guy with a bow tie. Because, when you have to fool around with drilling holes that go farther down the ground than it is from the top of Pike's Peak down to sea level, yeah, sure they do. By the time I was a roughneck, we'd got this one well down to 7,313 feet. That was a record. But last May, Pure Oil brought one in out in the Natrona Valley in Wyoming at 14,309 feet. That friend is almost 3 miles. Quite a hole, that, huh? Sure, I don't think there's an oil man in the world that don't wonder one time or another what's down there, besides rock and oil and gas. Oil that's made out of trees that died 20 million years ago. Oil that's made out of dinosaur bones. Oil that's maybe made out of the flesh and blood of men, maybe, that beat each other to death with a stone axe, ate saber-toothed tiger for lunch. Yeah, you get to wondering. You look at the cores that come up from way down there, and sometimes the little shells, trilobites mostly, that was alive when Manhattan Island, where New York is, was under half a mile of ice. We found something once, me and Billy Grunewald, and something found us. I'll tell you about it. We were down to around 5,400 feet. We'd set casing. We began to get water, so we hadn't stopped drilling and cement off. Well, you see, when water begins to seep in the hole, you pull your drill pipe, then you let down a cementing shoe inside the casing, and you plug up the bottom of the hole, casing and all, with quick-hardening waterproof cement. Then when it's hard, you drill through the cement, go on down, and the cement outside the casing at the bottom keeps the water out. Well, we had the drill pipe all pulled and cracked. The cement was setting, see? So we was shut down, waiting for it to harden. We'd been coring just before. You see, a core drill is hollow, and as the bit digs down, it stuffs the drillings up inside it, so when you pull it out, you got a sample of the kind of stuff you're going through. And a geologist can tell a lot from that. So there's nobody around the rig except me that night. The rest of the crew's gone into town. I was toasting some pork chops over the forge for myself, but I heard a car pulling up. Look out, it's Billy Grunewald, the geologist, and I give him a hello. Hi, Billy, come and have a pork chop.
Hi, Porky. Where's everybody?
They all went to town, I'm the whole crew.
I had 3 blowouts between here and Oxnard.
Yeah, I wondered where you was. Ted said you'd be in here about 3.
Yeah, I would have been, except for my tough luck. Oh, I'm dead.
Yeah, hungry?
Starved.
Yeah, I got 7 pork chops. And bread. Then some coffee, kind of.
Swell. Yeah, I got a bottle in the car.
We're going to have a banquet.
Hey, where's that core? That's what I came up here to look at.
Yeah, back there on the bench. Look at it after supper.
Hey.
What?
Didn't you say you were all alone here? I thought I heard somebody talking.
I don't see anybody. Keep an eye on that pork chop. You won't have any supper.
Yeah, I'm watching it.
Yeah, let me put the coffee on. Like so.
When did you finish cementing?
This morning. Last tower only made about 10 feet of hole, so Ted shut down before we get flooded out of house and home.
Funny about that water.
How?
Oughtn't to be any at that level, according to my figuring.
Well, there is.
Is it salt?
Sure, right out of the bottom of the ocean.
That's funny. Well, maybe I'll be able to tell something from the core. Yeah, I hope so. Well, last core I looked at, I'd have sworn we were getting into shale.
Ain't seen none yet from the cuttings.
That's funny.
Here, your pork chop's done. Yeah, take some bread.
Yeah, thanks. Oh, man.
Good, huh? Yeah, put on another. I had 2 already before you come.
Yeah, much obliged. Yeah, you never can tell what's down there. You get it all mapped and plotted out, all the strata. And all you know is what comes out of the hole.
Yeah, I'd like to go down there sometime if I was little enough.
Never get you down a hole.
Yeah, you'd fit. You're skinny.
I'll stay up here and look at the cores, Bud. Where is that one?
Behind you. Over there.
Hmm? Oh. I'll have a look at it.
Why don't you wait till you finish your supper?
I'm just going to look at it. Put on another pork chop for me.
Okay.
Well, I wish those screech owls would eat.
What's the matter?
Hey, wait a minute, Porky.
Well, what do you...
Listen.
What's eating you?
You know, I'd have sworn there's somebody up there in that portable board.
Ah, you're crazy. There's nobody up there.
Skin against those stands of drill pipe.
Ah, they're just rack crooked. One of them slipped. Come on back and eat your pork chop.
Yeah, I guess so. Only I...
What's you so jittery about, Billy? Come on, eat your sandwich. Here.
Yeah, well, thanks, Porky. I don't know. I'm just naturally that way, I guess. I'm always scared of the dark.
I'm scared.
Doggone it, I hate to be a baby, but I can't help it.
Scared of the dark? Honest?
Stupid, ain't it?
Oh, I don't know. Everybody's scared of something. Me? Spiders scare the tar out of me. Black widows. Oh. I know how you feel, Billy.
There another light over here?
Yeah. Here.
Oh, that's better. Hey, listen, Porky. Go out to the car and look in the left-hand door pocket and bring back that bottle, will you? That's what I need.
Okay, kid. Okay. So I picked up a flashlight. I turned around and went outside. I found the car. And I got the bottle. And the floor of the derrick was all lit up. And when I saw a beam of light suddenly flash up toward the forble board, I laughed. Billy Grunewald and his ideas... Sure, I looked up. There wasn't a darn thing up there, except the drill pipe racked against the fingerboard. Oh, this forble board. Well, you've seen oil derricks or pictures of them. Do you know that little platform that runs around the outside of the derrick about halfway up? Well, that's the forble board. Well, you see, drill pipe comes in lengths, and you handle them with several lengths screwed together so as to save time getting them in and out of the hole. Two lengths is a double, three is a thribble, four is a forble. When you pull a pipe, you hoist it up inside the derrick with a traveling block, which moves up and down from the crown block at the top of the derrick. And then when a forble of pipe is pulled out, it's held in the rotary table. You break the joint with tongs, like a great big Stilson wrench, you see. Snub a cable that's fastened to the handle over the cat head on the draw works, and that breaks the joint. Then you hold the tongs on the pipe, give the rotary table a few turns to unscrew it. You hoist away with the traveling block and swing it over against the fingerboard, lean it against the derrick. The guy up on the forble board takes off the traveling block. You do it all over again till you got all the pipe out, you see? Well, there wasn't anybody up on the forble board except a screech owl, and it flew away. So Billy turned his light off, and I come on inside. And just as I come up the steps, he let out a yell.
Yay!
What's the matter? What's the matter, Billy?
Hey, come here. Look here.
Well, what's it?
Look, Porky.
My... Where did you find that?
Now, listen, Porky, I give you my word. That was embedded in the core.
Why, it couldn't be.
I tell you, it was. Look where I dug it out. Hey, you know what? That rock there comes from a mile underground. And it's been a mile underground for a million years. And look at this.
And I did look. And what he was holding... was a gold ring. And it was all carved and filigreed, just like jewelry. And there wasn't any kidding about it. It was real. No, wait a minute. Hang on, I ain't done. I poked at the core of rock that looked like a kind of petrified salami or something. And then it was my turn to pretty near jump out of my pants. Because right alongside the place where Billy dug out the ring, there was a mud-covered, but very unmistakable, finger. I picked it up, and it was cold, and it was heavy, and it was solid rock. At least it felt like solid rock. And I looked at Billy, and Billy looked at me. He started to rub the mud off this here stone finger. And as he rubbed it, it begun to disappear. No, he could still feel it, he said, but when the mud was gone, neither one of us could see it. And he dropped it to the derrick floor. It went clunk, and we couldn't find it any place. So you know what we done? Well, we took that bottle and we took and finished it, Billy and me. We finished it in one slug of piece, and it was a full pint of bathtub gin. It tasted just like so much well water to me. And then we sat down on the derrick floor and we looked at each other. We didn't say a word. My eyes got heavier and heavier. The last thing I remember was I heard some kind of noise that seemed to be coming up from down the forble board 80 feet above us. I shut my eyes a minute. I guess I went to sleep. And I had awful dreams. Black widow, spiders crawling all over me with gold rings on their legs. Things I could hear, but I couldn't see, up on the forble board. Billy Grunewald climbing up the ladder outside the derrick in the moonlight. Faces looking at me, and I couldn't figure out who they were. Then I was waked up by a horrible scream. The crash alongside me that shook the whole derrick. I opened my eyes to see Billy Grunewald lying on the floor 2 feet away with a broken neck. With a broken neck and his left hand. Well, he put the gold ring on the little finger of his left hand, and the way his arms were spread out, his left little finger and the ring were gone. Well, friend, I got out of there. I run down to where Billy had left his car, and I got in. I stepped on the starter. And I couldn't get it to go, and then I remembered after I'm pretty near run down the battery that Billy had taken a key. I wasn't going up there and go through a dead man's clothes to get it. So I sat there in the car and shivered all by myself till daylight. And then Ted and the crew came. Afterwards, a state cop and everybody in the world was asking me questions.
Did you and Billy have a fight, Porky?
I told you we didn't, Ted.
But you had been drinking.
We only had that little pint, Ted.
Oh, what was he doing up on the forble board?
Did you threaten him and did he run up there to get away from
you? Listen, cop, don't be a chump. Billy Grunewald and I were good friends.
Then why'd you push him off the forble board?
I didn't, I tell you. I wasn't up there.
Oh, what did he go up there for?
I don't know. I was asleep.
How do you know he was up there?
I didn't say he was. You said so. Besides, how would he break his neck if he didn't fall from way up there?
Well, look, officer. I think it was just another accident. I mean, we haven't got anything on Porky, and personally, I don't believe he did it.
Well, so it's mighty mysterious.
So it is. But we got work to do. Now, how about it? That cement's hard down there, and I want to start drilling again, and I'm short-handed. Will you let Porky stay here till I run in my pipe again, and, well, then you can take him and ask him questions till you're blue in the face.
Well,
okay. Let's get rolling. You got steam up, Happy?
I'm all set.
All right. Porky, you go up on the forble board.
What? Not me, Ted.
Oh, don't be such a boob. There's nobody up there to shove you overboard. And you can put a safety line around you if you want to. And besides, you're getting paid to do what you're told. I've lost too much time already. Come on, get going.
So, okay, I go up on the forble board. And you can bet I took a good gander around before I did anything else. Now, I couldn't see a thing. So I signaled to the driller to let down the traveling block, and he did. Came sailing down from up above. I was just reaching for it to pick up the first forble of drill pipe. Gave a big jerk, and the cable broke. It dropped and nearly pulled me off the forble board. And it landed right on top of Ted. And if you have any idea what a guy looks like after 2 tons of metal land on him from 80 feet up, yeah, you keep your ideas to yourself. Well, that was enough. 2 accidents in a row. The whole crew quit. They wasn't going to wait for a third. And it was Ted's money that was paying off. There wasn't any more, and As far as I know, the abandoned derrick is still there. And that was 20 years ago. Oh, I forgot to tell you something. That traveling block was right in front of my face when it broke loose. It was hanging by steel cable, 3/4-inch steel cable. And I saw that cable break right before my eyes. It looked just like a piece of string when you snap it between your fingers. I could almost see the fingers. And you know what? There was something up there on the Forble board with me. And so a couple of days later, I came back. I don't know if there's anything in the world as desolate, as dismal, as dead-looking as an abandoned oil well rig. There it stands like a skeleton off on a deserted side road in the bare yellow hills surrounding it, and it's the deadest thing you ever saw. I sat in my car for a long time looking at it. Everything was just the way we'd left it. I looked into the floor. The smashed traveling block was there alongside the rotary table. There was a little mutter of steam from the boiler. That was all. Then I heard a tinkle of something as it hit the ground alongside me. I looked around. There wasn't a soul in sight. But at my feet was the gold ring that Billy Grunewald and I had found in a core of rock that came from a mile underground and from a million years ago in time. And I heard a little sound. The sound of a kid crying. And there wasn't any kid up there. And I heard it again, and it came from above my head, and I took out my revolver, and I loaded it carefully. I started up the ladder to the Forble board. No, there wasn't anything up there, nothing I could see. There was a voice crying. The voice of a little kid. And then there was a movement behind the rack of drill pipes, and I saw the pipe move, and I yelled, "Come out of there, whoever you are! Come out or I'll start shooting!" And the stand of pipes shivered, and I thought, what can it be that can handle that heavy pipe like Jack Straw's? And then there was a crash. The whole stand of pipe fell over, and I just got out of the way in time. And I was alone on the Forble board with the thing. But I couldn't see it. I felt the platform tremble under my feet again as something moved toward me. I fired 2 or 3 shots. And nothing happened. I started backwards. I knew it was following me because I could hear it meowing like a cat. My feet tripped over something. I saw it was a big can of red lead that somebody had left up there. Without thinking, I picked it up and I threw it at the sound and it splashed. And there it was. And I wish... The face of a little girl, frightened, crying with hunger and terror. Hands like a human being and a finger missing from the left hand. And a body. I'll not tell you about that. I told you how I'm scared of spiders. But I knew where it came from. It had come from the bowels of the earth, come riding up on the drill pipe as we yanked it out of the well. Come to an alien world and was lost. It stood there dripping with red paint, blood red from head to foot like some horrible dream. And it put its hand on my arm. Its hand was stone. Living, moving stone. And it looked into my eyes and mewed like a lost kitten. Twenty years ago, I discovered many things about it, what it used for food, that it was deaf, that it was invisible and couldn't see people when it was invisible, that if you sprayed it with mud or paint or grease paint, makeup, then it could see people. And believe me, I didn't want to see its body. I can see that in my nightmares. But its face, I can't help wanting to see that pathetic little girl face. I'm afraid maybe I've fallen. But it's very beautiful. And when it's well made up, it's... But making it up, rubbing grease paint on a stone face that looks at you and smiles and it makes sounds like a lost kitten yet. I can disguise the body in long dresses. She can't hear very well. And when she's hungry, I have to stay out of her way. I found out what she likes to eat, remember? No, no, sit still. Sit still, do. Sit still or I'll have to shoot you. I want you to meet my wife. Or rather, my wife wants to meet you. Mike. Mike. There she is. Come on in, dear.
The title of tonight's Quiet Please story is The Thing on the Furble Board. It was written and directed by Willis Cooper and featured Ernest Chappell. And Dan Sutter played Billy Grunewald. Pat O'Malley was Ted. And Cecil Roy was also a member of the cast. As usual, music for Quiet Please is played by Albert Berman. Sound? Sound by our good friend Albert April. Now, for a word about next week, here is our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
Well, I'm reasonably sure that all the characters in tonight's stories were completely fictional. At least I, for one, hope so. Next week, the story is called Presto Changeo, I'm sure.
And so, until next week at the same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell. This program was heard in Canada through the facilities of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Actually, no, it's not. 91.5 FM, WMFO, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. We heard Quiet Please, Willis Cooper's thrilling show. It only aired for a couple of years and had bad time slots, so it didn't gain as popularity as what Lights Out, which I mentioned, that's what we played last week, a Lights Out. Arch Obuler is noted for that. Actually, Willis Cooper created it, but isn't really given too much credit, except for with radio aficionados. My name is Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here. Happy Halloween. I don't know if there's a show after me or not, so I'm going to play out another album, like I did last week. It's going to be, let me see the CD player's working. Yeah. Soundtrack to the William Friedkin film Sorcerer, scored by Tangerine Dream. It goes out to Edward Tears of the Gods, Plastic Sushi on Friday nights. Thanks for listening.